In the second reading of Parshas Tetzaveh, we learn about the breastplate, the choshen, or as it's known, the choshen mishpat. Initially, we talk about onyx stones, and we talk about the straps that extend from the ephod, from the backwards apron. And then afterwards, we begin to focus on the breastplate. This is to be worn on the Kohen Gadol's chest. Aharon merits this garment as the first Kohen Gadol because he rejoiced in his heart, and the choshen is on the heart. And that's when Moshe Rabbeinu was elevated above him to become the leader of the Jewish people. And although Aharon first had a go at it, and he was not successful, nonetheless, Aharon had that room in his heart for his brother, his younger brother's rise. And the choshen mishpat, as it's called mishpat, atones for the miscarriages of justice. Also, it's going to be explained that when there is a specially made parchment inserted in it, then it becomes an oracle or a communications device. At any rate, from Pasuk Tesvav, or 15 onward, we hear about the Choshen. We have a commandment, V'yasisa Choshen Mishpat, you'll make a Choshen of judgment. And we hear about how it has to be made, Maisa Choshev, it has to be made of a woven design. And the Torah talks to us about the details of the ingredients, what will be used. And then afterwards we hear about the size, and then we hear about precious gemstones. We have four rows of rectangular shaped gems, maybe rectangular, I'm not so sure about that. That's how it's depicted. And at any rate, we hear about the details of these special gemstones that represent the entirety of the tribes of Israel. And towards the end of the reading, after having completed the description of the breastplate in verse 28 and telling us that it must always remain in its proper place, the Torah then speaks about the function of the Choshen Mishpat in verse 29. And the Torah says that V'nosa Aharon Eshmeis Bnei Yisrael, that by wearing the breastplate and its engraved stones, Aaron is thusly carrying the names of Israel's sons. In the Choshen Mishpat, in the breastplate of judgment over his heart, Alibay, the Voy Alakodesh, when he comes into the tabernacle. And that serves Lizikorin, it serves as a constant remembrance, Lefnei Hashem Tomet, before God. So in other words, after hearing about how to make the Choshen Mishpat and the details of what was used, all of the different materials that were necessary to fashion the Choshen Mishpat, the Torah then turns its attention to the function of the Choshen Mishpat. What's the purpose? The purpose is a reminder. Whenever Aaron will go into the Holy, or the Holy of Holies, into the Kodesh or Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's always going to be wearing the Choshen Mishpat, and in this way, he will carry the names of the different tribes of Israel, remembering at all times that he represents not himself, his family, or his tribe, but ultimately all of Bnei Yisrael. Then in verse 30, the Torah changes its direction. And the Torah tells us about what you should place inside the folds of the Choshen. So the Choshen was a long rectangular piece of cloth, but was folded in half to make a square. In verse 30, V'nosata el choshen ha-mishpat, you'll place into the folds of that breastplate of judgment es ha-urim v'yes ha-tumim, the urim and tumim. By the way, Yale University, I think, or Harvard, till today, their official emblem, it says urim and tumim. And they say that's because there was a Spanish rabbi who spent time in the United States. And he was the rabbi of the Rhodes Synagogue for a little while. And the man who later became the president of the university, I think it was Harvard, was a person who spent time with this rabbi. And he learned Hebrew from him and all kinds of other things. At any rate, the Urim and Tumim are placed into the folds of the adjustment. And we'll soon see what does that mean, Urim and Tumim. There's different opinions as to what it means. V'hoyu alei v'harin. So the first thing is, we have a verb, we have a command. V'nosata, you will place into the Choshen Mishpat. What will we place in the Choshen Mishpat? The Urim and the Tumim. Okay. The next part of the verse is V'ho'yu alei v'harein b'voyel lefnei Hashem. The next part of the verse sounds relatively redundant. It will be on the heart of Aaron when he comes before God. The Torah then says, not only will it be on the heart of Aaron, but v'nosa aharon es mishpat bnei Yisrael alibay. Aharon is going to carry the judgment of the Jewish people on his heart. Lefnei Hashem tamid, before God at all times, constantly. This is a very strange verse, because the verse begins by telling us something new and different, and it reverts back to the same old. It starts off by telling us about what we're going to place into the Choshen Mishpat. You'll place in a Urim and a Tumim, and we don't even know what that means because these words don't show up in Hebrew. Urim and Tumim show up once with regard to this. They're not used elsewhere. You'll place into Mishpat Urim and Tumim. And then it says, going right back to exactly what we said in verse 29, that these will be on the heart of Aaron, and he will carry on the heart of Aaron for the Mishpat Bnei Yisrael to atone for the miscarriage of justice. But this has already been said. So it begins with the business of placing the Urim and Tumim, and then it goes back to the discussion of the Choshen and how it will be on Aaron's heart, and how by doing so, there will be a constant remembrance of the children of Israel. So Rashi says, Es ha'urim v'es ha'tumim. He says, this means, because it says you place Urim and Tumim into the Choshen, that means that the Choshen is in and of itself not Urim or Tumim, because you're placing Urim and Tumim inside it. Now, I should tell you, there are Rishonim who hold that the Urim and Tumim is another name for the Choshen itself. But clearly Rashi doesn't follow that approach. And I think the reason Rashi doesn't follow that approach is because it says, V'nosata, you should place El Choshen Mishpat, into the Choshen Mishpat, you should place Urim and Tumim. So how could Choshen Mishpat be Urim and Tumim if you're placing it into the Choshen Mishpat? But don't speak so quickly. You'll see, it's not so simple.
What distinguishes Urim and Tumim, though?
Good question. Let's see what Rashi says. Okay. First, what is it? The first thing we got to know. What is it? What is Urim and Tumim? So Rashi says, Hu ksav shem hamaforish. This is a parchment upon which is written the ineffable name of God. The explicit ineffable name of God. And Rashi says, Shahoya nosno betoch kifle ha-choshen. It was placed into the folds of the choshen. Remember, the choshen is a piece of rectangular cloth. So when you fold a rectangle in half, you get a square. So in that fold was placed a parchment. And on that parchment is written the explicit and ineffable name of God, Shem HaMeforish. It's inside the parchment.
Is it one piece? Both are together?
Urim and Tumim, it sounds like one thing. The question, of course, is what is this? Why is it called Urim and Tumim? So the Ramban says that this was a mystery, a secret, a sod that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu from God on Har Sinai. And he wrote it in resplendent holiness, and he placed it inside, and nobody knew how to write something like this. It was one parchment of history. One ever, written by Moshe Rabbeinu, with the secrets that he learned from God at Har Sinai, never communicated it with anybody, and that was placed inside the folds of the Choshen. So what does it do? Why is it called Urim V'Tumim? So Rashi says something very interesting.
No,
just there aren't 12 parchments. There's one parchment.
Just one parchment.
It's called Urim and Tumim. It's placed in the folds of the Choshen.
Not the gemstones.
The gemstones are not called Urim and Tumim. According to Rashi, the Urim and Tumim is the name of the parchment. So why is it called Urim and Tumim? First of all, why does it have two names? Is it Urim or is it Tumim? And secondly, why is it called Urim V'Tumim? Why is it called the parchment? The scroll, the mezuzah. So Rashi says this. This scroll was able to activate the Choshen. Sha'al yodo, it was by virtue of this parchment, who may ear, the gemstones would
light up.
How do you say light up in Hebrew? Or is light. Laha'ir is to illuminate. And me'ir is, they become radiant. They are radiant. So, shahoya me'ir, that these gemstones would begin to radiate. They would light up. Umetameim es dvarav. The word tumim, he says, comes from the terminology of to complete, like the word tamim, which means complete. So it's mitamim, it completes its words or its things. And that is to say, we have a tradition which is discussed in detail in the Talmud, that when the Jewish people needed to ask of Hashem direction, they would do so to the Kohen who was wearing the Urim V'Tumim, and the Kohen would be able to respond to them. This was essentially an incredible communications device through which they were literally speaking to God, getting direct communication from God Himself. So the Urim lights up, the otiot, the letters of the Choshen, because those gemstones had letters engraved. They had the letters of the Shvatim. So the letters that were engraved would light up to spell out the answer. And in doing so, it would complete the words, or the communication would be made. A full communication would be established. And the notion of full or completion is called tamim. So it's called Urim and Tumim, because it was through the parchment that you had Urim and Tumim come to the Choshen Mishpat, the otherwise lifeless, inanimate breastplate of judgment.
But wouldn't the proper syntax be Vet HaUrim V'Tumim as opposed to Et HaTumim? Because that implies something separate, wouldn't it?
So actually, it does. It really seems like it's doing two things.
No, but it implies something, separate objects. That's how
it does. It does imply separate objects, but really, as Rashi explains to us, it's not called Urim or Tumim because of its the objective reality, but rather because of its function, what it brings about. It brings about Urim, and it brings about Tumim. It enables the breastplate to go live, meaning to light up, and it allows for a communication to be established, for lack of better terminology, for the electromagnet to be completed. A connection is achieved. So that's metamim. So there's actually two things going on here. It's lighting up, it's going live, and it's actually working. You're establishing that connection, that communication with God. Urim and Tumim. Not because of what it is, but because of what it's able to make happen. Through this is what's achieved. So what does it mean, es mishpat bnei Yisrael? He says, you'll place the Urim v'tumim. Aaron will carry it in his heart. He'll carry es mishpat bnei Yisrael. He'll carry the justice of the Jewish people. Says Rashi, davar shehem nishpatim v'neuchachim al yodai im lasis davar olay lasis. This is not a repetition of what we spoke of earlier. Earlier, we mentioned and talked about the idea that if there is a miscarriage of justice, which is a grave sin in Hashem's eyes, that the Urim V'Tumim, or more accurately, the Choshen Mishpat, would be able to atone for the miscarriage of justice. That's why it's called the Choshen Mishpat. There were different things in the Beis HaMikdash that atoned for different realities. There was imperfections, inequities, shortcomings, and certain things in the Mishkan atoned for it. In fact, the daily offerings atoned for what? Or more accurately, our lost opportunities, our mitzvahs asay. And even if we did the mitzvahs asay we didn't do fully. We didn't do with the investment of heart, mind, and soul, and passion. We weren't as meticulous as we should be, so we fell short. So this korban would kind of create a surge of energy that would kind of move things along. Whatever was missing, the korban would make up for. So the Choshen Mishpat would make up for a miscarriage of justice, so its blight would not be left upon the Jewish people. That's how we explained the idea of the Choshen Mishpat before. But now Rashi's saying something else. He's saying it's through the Choshen that the Jewish people are judged. It doesn't mean really judged, but it's things, circumstances are clarified. We come to a judgment call or a decision. This is more like the idea of rendering decisions for the Jewish people. Should we go to war or not go to war? This is probably the most fateful decision any head of state can ever have to make. You're making a decision that will irreparably change lives. People's children will die. People will never be able to live out their lives. But if you don't go to war, when you must go to war, more innocent lives will be lost. Or perhaps another justification. And then history will not judge you kindly. To have no courage, to have the temerity, to just have peace at any price, that's Chamberlain. That's not a good thing. To be an aggressive warmonger is a terrible thing. So the most serious decision any head of state ever has to make, ever. This is applicable everywhere, in every country, in every civilization, every society. The most serious decision is ever going to war. How do they make those decisions? Today, they make those decisions. How did they make it then? They had God telling them what to do. They would come and say, Allah, Eloi Allah, go up to war, don't go up to war. And the Kohen Gadol would look down at his communications device and it would illuminate, it would shine up, it would say Cain or Lo. So even if you went to battle and it was a disaster, you knew you're doing the right thing. Why? Because God said so. This is what you could call an oracle. It's really a way for us to know exactly what does Hashem want or what Hashem doesn't want. And that's why it's called Mishpat. So the Mishpat means it clarifies, it decides, it helps us come to a resolution on whatever we might ask. Incidentally, the questions that we asked were not of personal concern. They were issues of national concern, like going to war, not going to war. Big decisions like that. So that's when we would ask the Urim V'Tumim and find out what to do. And it was also not a way to resolve halachic disputes. There's a methodology for that. Torah gives us a way to figure that out. Ulafi Medrash Agada, according to the Medrash Agada, the idea of the Chayshim Mishpat is Shachayshim Mechaper Al Ma'avse Adin. Here Rashi adds that there is the Medrash Agada, which he doesn't bring in the first interpretation. It is that the Chayshim actually does atone for miscarriage of justice, and Nikra Mishpat, it's called judgment Al Shem Slichas HaMishpat, because it atones for lack of judgment. It's called judgment, but actually is dealing with the lack thereof. Now, why does Rashi have to say two things? I think that the notion of mishpat here is unwieldy. If you wanted to say that that's how Jewish people reach decisions, justice is not the right word. It's doing justice. It's not doing justice. It's coming to decisions. It's getting clarity. There are words for that. It's not justice. Doing justice is a funny word. So why doesn't Rashi say to Medrash Agada that it comes to atone for a miscarriage of justice? Two reasons. Because we already heard about this before. And here, verse 30 starts off by telling us about the Urim and Tumim, which illuminate and complete the connection. What does that have to do with the idea of miscarriage of justice? Number one. And number two, miscarriage of justice is not justice. It should be Choshen Ma'avsei Mishpat. The Choshen that makes up, it doesn't make the judgment. It makes up for lack of judgment. But this is what the Torah gives us, this is what we have to go on. So therefore we have to invoke both interpretations, and only by using both together can we come to some kind of understanding of why it would be called Choshen Mishpat as a result of multiple reasons, multiple ideas that are being conveyed. Incidentally, the notion of that Aaron will have to carry the Mishpat Bnei Yisrael is also somewhat difficult to understand. According to the Sefarno, it indicates that Aaron would pray for Hashem's forgiveness for the Jewish people. Not that the Choshen would atone for justice. Aaron would pray for atonement for justice. At any rate, we now are going to take a deeper look into this and get to the bottom line of, was this a wardrobe accessory or a communications device? What's up with this? So there's a little piece of Rashi I left out. Now we're going to take a look and see that Rashi here, as it's quoted by the Rebbe in the beginning, the first Rashi on verse 30, which talked to us about the idea of Urim V'Tumim as illuminating and completing, Rashi adds another two sentences. Page Reish Nun Beis, Simen Yud Dalad. So if you'll take a look in the bold print on top, the second part of the Rashi is U'B'Migdash Sheini, in the second Beis HaMigdash, Hoya HaChayshin. There was a breastplate. Why? She'i efshal l'kohen gadol li'is mechusar begadim, because a kohen gadol is not permitted to serve at the Beis HaMikdash if he doesn't have all the raiments. Aval eisi Hashem lehoya, but that parchment wasn't there. Lehoya b'teichin. There was a choshen. There was no Urim V'Tumim inside it. No parchment. Val shem eisi haksav kari mishpat. It was because of that parchment that was called Mishpat. So really, in the second Beis HaMikdash, you could have called it a Choshen, but at least according to the first interpretation of Rashi, you couldn't call it a Choshen Mishpat. Why could you call it a Choshen Mishpat? Because it didn't provide any Mishpat.
It didn't light up ever.
It didn't light up. It didn't talk to us. We couldn't establish a connection. The cell tower was down. And that was the case? Huh?
No Wi-Fi.
No Wi-Fi. Do you know what the Wi-Fi was? The Wi-Fi was the Luchos. The Wi-Fi is the Kruvim. That's the actual Wi-Fi. This is the battery. No Wi-Fi, no battery. It didn't work. The Wi-Fi was there deep in the mountain. The urn is buried in the mountain, but there's no battery in the iPhone. No battery. It looks good. It's a nice accessory. But it couldn't be a communications device. The Rebbe says, pray tell, why is Rashi talking about this now? Is this a historical history lesson of the second Beis HaMikdash? L'may nafkemina, in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, to talk about the second Beis HaMikdash, whether they will have or won't have the battery that works, the parchment. What relevance is this? How does it explain the meaning of Choshem Mishpat any better? Whatever, second Beis HaMikdash. Rashi can comment in the Gemara and talk about the second Beis HaMikdash. So how did that work? They were missing a portion of what you need to have in the Beis HaMikdash, and the answer is you're right. They were missing a portion of it. A lot of things are missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Aron wasn't there. The Kruvim weren't there. The Luchot weren't there. Had they come into the Holy of Holies? They came in. What was it? An empty room? Like why is Rashi telling us stories about the second Beis HaMikdash now? This is about understanding the verse. The verse is difficult to understand because it says Choshen and Mishpat. We don't know why it's called Mishpat. It says Urim and Tumim. We don't know why it's called. What is it? Is it a Choshen, Mishpat, Urim, or Tumim? What is it? You got four names here. Make up your mind. So Rashi gives us an explanation. The Urim and Tumim is the Ksav. Why is the Ksav, why is the parchment called the Urim and Tumim? Because it's Meir Umetameim, the Choshen Mishpat. It lights up the Choshen, it helps it go live, and it enables the communication to be achieved. Or God, it completes our electromagnet, so it's called Urim and Tumim. Now you know why it's called Urim V'Tumim. Now you know why it's called Choshem Mishpat. And let's move on. Actually, just 1 second. Before we go, I just want you to know, in the second Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have it. They didn't have it? There was no Choshem? No, there was a Choshem. You can't have a Kohen Gadol without 8 raiments. He has to have this wardrobe. But it was only an accessory. It looked good, but it didn't really work. L'may nafkemina. Of what difference does this make? Mipirush Rashi ala milim esurim v'satumim, hu ksav shem ha-mefoydash. This is that sacred name that was written on the parchment. Shahayonoisnim v'tzich kifla ha-cheshna was placed into the folds. And then it was through this that Meir Dvarav u'metameim es Dvarav, that the gemstones would light up and that the sentences would be completed. We'd ask the question and then get the answer. So it brings completion. According to this oila, shahurim v'tumim einim davar nifred me'acheshna. So then the Urim V'Tumim is not really separate from the Choshen. That's called Urim and Tumim. It's the Urim and Tumim of the Choshen. The Choshen lit up. The Choshen was a communications device. Va'al Yodam, and it was through the parchment, or battery if you will, that Memale HaChoshen, that the Choshen was able to fulfill Tafkido, its purpose, Keroi, properly. Elo Shalachayda, so he said, Azes Mashmar Saksuvim. If the Urim V'Tumim is the completion of the Choshen, then there's something off with the order of the Psukim as they're presented to us. Because the second reading of Parshas Tzava is primarily about the Choshen. And what happens here is that the verses open with the Maisei HaChoshen, with the making of the Choshen. It concludes with the commandment of what to do with the Choshen, namely, that it should be fastened to the chest of Aaron. And the Torah says not only it should be fastened, but v'lo yizach ha-choshen me'al ha-efod. Let it never depart from Aaron's chest. It has to be fastened in a way that it doesn't bang around and doesn't move away. And then only after this, m'tayer es ha-kosov ha-shimush b'choshen. Then the Torah comes along and describes, so why is it so important for it to be fastened on Aaron's chest? Because v'nosa Aaron shmeiz bnei Yisrael, because this way he will have the names of the sons of Israel b'choshen ha-mishpat aliboy. All the names of all the tribes will be upon his heart. So Aaron will know at all times that when he prays from his heart, who is he praying for? The entirety of the nation. He's not here to pray for Levi. He's not here to pray for Torah scholars. He's not here to pray for the military. He prays for all the Jewish people. And he has a constant reminder of all the names of all the tribes in their various colors and iterations, in the various forms, with their various expressions. And then,
after the first Beis HaMikdash, it was purely ornamental.
Well, that's what we're kind of seeing or understanding here. But the question is, why is Rashi telling this to us? And the thing is this. Something's off with the verses. Where the verses go and describe the details of the Choshen, how it should be fastened, why it should be fastened, and then we have verse 30. Oh, by the way, that Choshen that we just talked about and described in its completion, the Choshen we told you exactly where it should be, how it should be worn, when it must be, that thing. By the way, make sure before you fasten it, make sure in the folds you place that Urim V'Tumim. Shouldn't that have been earlier? Shouldn't we hear about the Choshen in its entirety, with all of its materials, finished, completed, and then you can fasten it? We're getting dressed a little prematurely here. Make the Choshen, finish making it, finish fashioning it. When it's a completed item, then you'll fasten it. Then Aaron will wear it. That's the puzzle, that's the question that arises from the cascading verses here. The last verse seems to be out of place. It appears as an addendum when actually it should have been prior to verse 29, before we describe how you'll wear and what you'll do with the Choshen. To answer this very unspoken question, Rashi tells us that the Choshen has two different personas. The Choshen is Atzmo, the Choshen itself is a beged. It's an accessory. It's a wardrobe accessory. That's what it is. There are shmone begadim, there are eight raiments. That's one of the eight raiments. Whether it functions or doesn't function as a communication device doesn't take away from the fact that it is a portion of the wardrobe. It needs to be there. Heim einam chelek bilti nifredimenu. But the Urim V'Tumim are not an inseparable part of it insofar as accessory is concerned. If the Choshen was missing gemstones, then it's not an accessory. If the gemstones were there, but the names of the tribes are not inscribed, it's not able to serve its ornamental purposes. However, if the Choshen doesn't have a parchment in its folds, it can serve its ornamental purposes. What can't it do? It can't do its secondary purpose, its secondary the mission. What's the secondary purpose? To communicate. So the Choshen is actually both then. It's regard to the second purpose of the Choshen, that the Urim V'Tumim serve as an inseparable part of the Choshen. The Urim V'Tumim are inseparable insofar as the Choshen's communications persona is concerned. But as far as its accessories persona is concerned, the Urim V'Tumim actually add nothing. They weren't seen. They didn't change the way it appeared on a regular basis, and it wasn't even a part of it.
Why was the primary purpose ornamental? Yeah, because you're saying the primary purpose was ornamental. The secondary purpose was
because,
communication.
I'll tell you why. Because in the second Beis HaMikdash, they were still a Beis HaMikdash. They still did everything they had to do. And Aaron would still look down, or the Kohen Gadol would still look down at his breastplate and see the names of all the tribes, representing all the colors of the Jewish people. Forget colors of Benetton. The colors of Israel.
I think what Mark is asking, though, is why even have a Choshen, but for the fact that it's there to communicate?
And the answer is that the Choshen serves to remind Aharon that he's there to represent the entire nation.
I didn't say
colors of Israel lightly. Gemstones. Every Yid is a diamond. A different kind of diamond. Some Yidden shine one way, some Yidden shine another way. But he has to know, Aaron's reminded constantly, every Yid's a diamond, and every Yid is a different color. There's onyx, and there's carbuncle, and there's diamond, and there's ruby. There's all kinds. They're all precious. And they're many different colors. And if Aaron forgets this for one moment, or it moves from his heart, he's not a Kohen Gadol, and the Beis HaMikdash can't function as a Beis HaMikdash. Because it has to be the place where the Kohen Gadol is representing every single member of Am Yisrael. And if he personalizes things or thinks about his own family or own tribe or his own friends, then we miss the point. That's a very important thing. Now, besides this, we were fortunate enough to be able to communicate with God. But that's not part of the Beis HaMikdash per se. Beis HaMikdash is the place, like Rambam says, where we can do our service. We have many, many mitzvahs to do. Karbanot and offerings and many things to do. What do you need to do these things? A Beis HaMikdash. What if the Shekhinah won't be in the Beis HaMikdash in an overt way? Guess what? It wasn't in the second Beis HaMikdash. It still functioned. So what if we didn't feel the presence of God? So what if we didn't see the presence of God? Still do your thing? And that is the purpose that's actually being conveyed to us. Rashi says, yes, there is a secondary purpose. This explains why it only comes in verse 30 after hearing about the Choshen and the purpose of the Choshen. Because at first we hear about the Choshen as Big Dei Kahuna, as a wardrobe accessory. I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. It's a very important thing. Bizman she'ein big deyam aleim, ein kuhunatan aleim. If the Kohen has no garments, he has no kuhuna. The thing that animates or activates his kuhuna is his garments. So he needs to have a choshen, or he's not a Kohen Gadol. But conversely, the Torah now adds to us that this garment that the Kohen Gadol wore, because he represented the Jewish people, and because the Beis HaMikdash is such a holy place, and because the Shechina is there, it was able to serve in a secondary function as a communications device. But that was only because the battery was in it. That was based on the Ksav.